So welcome to this 9-day retreat in January. And so this is my intentions here for this retreat are as usual to get you into the deepest stages of meditation and to help you along the way. We've helped already by giving the facilities. They're not the best, but they're pretty good. I can't do anything about the lightning or the sun, but nevertheless you have your lovely rooms. And just like the Buddha said for the monks in the time of the Buddha during the hot seasons in India, if you want to keep your room nice and cool, open up the windows at night time to get the cool air in and then close them up during the day. And that way that you can actually keep a much lower temperature in your rooms. But if you just close them at night time because you're afraid, you don't need to be afraid. There's no burglars, there's no ghosts, there's no psychopaths on this retreat, so you're perfectly safe. So but if you are paranoid, then you're going to fry during the daytime. So windows open at night if you can, and then just that means that the cool air gets in, and it's shut them up in the morning when the sun comes up, so it keeps cool during the day. And if you do really get hot in your rooms, you can come in here with this aircon, which means you can meditate more. That's the whole idea of keeping it really hot in your rooms, so you have to come here and meditate more and sleep less. It's all planned. But once you are here in this room or in whatever else you go and meditate, where you meditate, we want to learn just how to make our minds very peaceful. And many of you have heard my teachings before. Those of you who haven't been here on a retreat before has heard me on the internet or read the books, you've got some good idea of what we're supposed to be doing here. This is a meditation retreat. And in order to meditate, to get insight, to get stillness, to understand what this meditation is all about, the magic word is stillness. And if you can get your body to be still, there's a good chance your mind might be still. And when your mind becomes still, then it gets to have super mindfulness, super energy, lots of joy, and that's where you get the great insights from. And it's stillness, the word which I now use for the Pali word samadhi, it's calling it stillness. And again, last year, a Chinese lady who was here, when she listened to me saying samadhi means stillness, she came up and said that that is exactly as it's translated in the Chinese arguments. Concentration is never used in those translations. In fact, the English translation of meditation as concentration was a great mistake. I mean, a really serious mistake, because that's confused many, many people. And too many people have got the idea that in order to meditate, you have to use force, effort. Just like at school, concentrate, the teacher used to say. And that just made you more tense. You didn't relax, you didn't have any peace at all. But the word is stillness, not concentration. This is not concentration camp. This is stillness camp. So in order to be still, what do you have to do for stillness? Just like if your body's going to be still, it has to stop moving. Now why does a body move? You notice there's these tightnesses, these tensions, these aches and the pains in your body, which makes you move this way, makes you move that way. But when your body becomes really relaxed, you don't need to move. Everything is comfortable. And how does your body get relaxed? You know, there's some tightnesses, pressures, tensions in your body. You can actually feel them sometimes. You can feel those pushing out if you've eaten too much breakfast, or pulling and stretching this way. And those are like the tensions and tightnesses in the body which, if you don't relax them, will cause you a lot of problems. So for a long time now, as a meditating monk, I've used my mindfulness to really learn how to relax my own body. Relax all parts of the body, even, you know, from my toes, to my guts, to my head if I've got a headache, to your nose if you've got hay fever, to relax everything. And it's not that hard to do. Number one, you have to be mindful, to be aware. The awareness has to be focused. Focus on the part of the body which is the problem. When we talk about awareness, you can't be aware of everything. There's just too much data to be aware of. So in meditation, one focuses awareness on the important task at hand. So if you relax in the body and there's an ache, irritation or pain, you focus on that area. That's the business part of this procedure. And once you focus on that part of the body, then what do you do with it? What you do with it is learn how to relax. And the trick is, just as you probably would have expected, compassion, kindness. That relaxes everybody. Even last night, because I was not here, because I went off to Dhammaloka to give a talk, and at the end of the talk, one gentleman said he really enjoys me coming to Friday night talk. He always loves to come along. He said, it's just, maybe not just what I say, but he feels so relaxed when I get there. He feels welcome because of the kindness. And you see, if you, those of you who know me for a long time, I'm a very soft monk. I'm very kind and gentle. Sometimes I let you get away with murder almost. But nevertheless, it means you feel welcome. You don't feel afraid. Now imagine if I came up here with a peak cap and a little moustache and say, "Hi, Ajahn Brahm." Now what would you do? You all get tense and afraid. You won't relax at all. You see, force, controlling, fear, that's what makes you tense. Kindness and compassion, when you know you're in a place where everybody cares for you and they want to protect you, they want to look after you, they want to make sure you get a really good breakfast, a really delicious lunch, they want to make sure that you're comfortable in your hut, they want to make sure if anything you need is given. So that's that beautiful kindness. And what does that do? That relaxes you. The body just doesn't sort of scrunch up in a protection fear mode. It relaxes. So that compassion and kindness, acceptance, that is actually what relaxes even parts of the body. So if I've got an ache and a pain, I look at it, okay, never mind, you can come in here as well. I relax with it. So the pain is not afraid of me. The pain doesn't think, oh my God, here comes Ajahn Brahm, what's he going to do to me? Instead the pain comes, oh, here's Ajahn Brahm, my good old friend. How you going, Ajahn Brahm? Yeah, how you going, pain? So when you talk and treat these things with kindness and respect, what happens? It relaxes. Just like you relax, you know, if I'm treating you with kindness and friendliness. But if I am the big monk, and sometimes people get really afraid, wow, it's big monk, famous monk, ooh, what am I going to do? I can't understand why people get afraid of a monk. Yeah, afraid of the policeman, yeah, afraid of a snake, afraid of the lightning, yeah, but afraid of a monk? That's like being afraid of Danny's rabbit. If you haven't seen, she's a very scary rabbit, that movie. But when you're not afraid, you relax. So that's what we do with the pain or the aches. You're mindful of these things and you learn how to give them some love, some respect. And what your mindfulness does, it gives you feedback. You're mindful, and you're mindful, and you're mindful. And as you continue to be mindful, you discover what you're mindful of changes. And it doesn't need to be a brain scientist to actually know that as it's changing, it's actually getting more relaxed, more easy, more peaceful. The irritation, the ache, the pain, the harshness, the sharpness of it is disappearing. There, you're relaxing the body. So the mindfulness gives you the feedback necessary to know how to relax. And after a while of doing that, maybe months or years, you get very skilled at knowing how to relax your own body. You've got an ache somewhere, yeah, you try and move it if possible, but if the ache doesn't go, for your mindfulness there, just relax it, just with kindness, with love, with fearlessness, and the whole thing starts to open out, soothe, relax. And I tell you all my stories because now they're only things I really know. I don't know your stories, I know only mine. But the last time I really, really did this was about 15 months ago. And that was when quite a few monks at Bodhinyana Monastery had food poisoning, including me. That's the only time which I've gone without a meal in the last 2 or 3, 4 years, deliberately. Because now I can't go without a meal. Because if I do, then number one, sort of people get disappointed because a lot of times they come to feed me in particular. And also, if I did disappear, the next day I'd have a whole shelf load of medicines. So I'm afraid to get sick. But there's no way you could go and eat that day because, you know, you were just, you know, literally rolling around on the floor of my cave, just holding my guts. And it was just really, you know, very painful if you've had food poisoning. But that was when I remembered to practice what I preach. You know, sometimes you just forget. You know how to do it, but I don't know what it is, stupidity or just, you know, forgetfulness. And I remembered, what would I teach other people to do in this situation? And that's what came up. Okay, put your mindfulness right in the pain and just love it, relax it, be kind to it. And just the mindfulness just watched it relax and relax and relax. I thought it wouldn't relax that far, but it relaxed all the way until the pain went. So it was gone, about 25, 30 minutes, and it was all gone. And that was amazing, even though, you know, I've done it before and you know how it works. But every time you redo that, you realize, wow, this is an amazing thing. You can get something which is really sort of severe food poisoning, and lots of the other monks had it as well. And within half an hour, you can totally overcome it, transcend it, get beyond it with no medications, just with a bit of mindfulness and the magic ingredient, kindness. Just relaxed everything. Really relaxed to the max. Now, if you can learn how to relax to that degree, you'll have a wonderful time. And also, any sort of diseases, illnesses, wounds or whatever, it's, you know, you may not overcome it, but certainly you'll ease it off enormously. So remember, the mindfulness gets you in contact with the feeling, the loving kindness, the compassion, the acceptance, that learns is a trick to relax things. You see it's going in the right direction because the mindfulness gives you feedback and it gets less and less of a problem until it's just so peaceful and smooth and no problem at all. Now, I mention that because that's called relaxing the body. The next thing you do in meditation is relaxing your mind. It's a beautiful way of describing meditation. Relaxing the body, now relaxing the mind. And I emphasize this at the beginning of this retreat, because a lot of times people, they don't relax the mind, they force the mind. And the mind gets really, really tense. In the same way that they may go to the gym and they push against these weights, they run harder, they work harder, no pain, no gain. That's not the way it works in Buddhism. We don't believe in pain in Buddhism. We're the gentle, compassionate religion. For those of you who haven't heard this joke before, yes, we have anapanasati, which is mindfulness along with the breath, but we never do anapanasati, which is mindfulness along with the pain. That's not part of Buddhism. So remember, we're trying to be gentle, peaceful and kind. So instead of forcing the mind, we learn how to relax it. And to relax the mind, you've got to take all the pressure off it, all the pushing and pulling which causes the tension, the strain inside the mind. And I think you should be able to understand that metaphor from the body, translate it to your mental world, and understand how you are supposed to meditate, to relax the mind. You're aware of your mental world, just like I was aware of my pain. And then I give it kindness, softness. Stupid mind, you are my friend. Crazy, sleepy mind, I love you. If you're kind to your mind, then the mind relaxes. Your mindfulness shows you just how your mental world is getting less, again, I use the word already, psychotic, and more peaceful, more happy, and more free. Why? Because you're not pushing and pulling your mind so much. You're just being kind. You are letting it be. Now, teaching number one, if you're going to write anything down, or if any of you, what they do these days, they don't write it down anymore, they tattoo it. So if any of you want a tat, we should actually, it's about time actually, we started a Buddhist tattoo shop, you know, with all these great sayings of the Buddha or other great monks, so we could tattoo them on people's body. Maybe we could make a bit of money for the nuns' sala that way. But anyway, one of Ajahn Chah's great teachings was, you meditate not to attain things, but to let go of things. Beautiful teaching. So here, you're not here to attain something. If you come here with all your goals listed down, what you want to achieve after these 9 days, all the tick boxes which you have to complete before you can leave, you have just stuffed up your whole retreat. You idiots. Throw away all those goals. Take them away. Put them in the bin. You're not trying to get somewhere. The whole purpose of mental relaxation is not trying to get somewhere, but being here. Not getting somewhere, but being here. How much of your life so far have you actually been here? And how much have you been going somewhere? Many of you even, you know, yesterday came to this retreat. You come from overseas, you come from distant places. And now, at last, you're here. Now, are you going to carry on travelling and going somewhere else? Yeah, I'm here now. Now I'm going to go into jhana. Now I'm going to go into enlightenment. Now I'm going to go into psychic powers. Now, how many of us are always going somewhere and never actually being here? So listen, you've all arrived. Well done. Now you're here. Be here. And don't go anywhere. Don't try and achieve anything. Don't want things. Just see how much of this wanting you can let go of. And instead, just be. And that becomes the essence of the meditation. Just the letting go of the craving, letting go of the wanting, letting go of the striving, so you can be happy, respectful, and compassionate to where you are right now. This is good enough. Because I want you to see if you can relax during this retreat. Just be happy not to attain a damn thing. Just to be as stupid as when you came into this place, even more. I'm just going to enjoy the next 9 days. This is relaxation. How many times in your life have you been able to come to a place and have absolutely nothing to do and nothing to achieve? Where no one's going to give you a report card. You don't have to sort of clock in, like I used to go to these jobs when I was a student, to try and make some money, and you had to put your card into the clock-in machine. You clocked in at a certain time, you got to clock off at a certain time. Maybe we should do that, this meditation. I'll give you all little cards so you can clock in the morning, so I can see whether you were come here on time or whether you were late, see how many hours you meditate. That would never be a terrible, that would be totally opposite to what this place is all about. This place is not trying to control you. It's not you trying to control yourself. It's you learning how to be. And to relax this mental world, which is always trying to meet somebody's requirements. To always be pressured to achieve this, to do that, to get up in the morning. If any of you here, any of you get up one morning and you come into this room and you think, yes, I'm the first in this room. I'm here before the monks. Yeah. That is very stupid. If any of you decide, yes, I'm going to meditate and be the last person who goes back afterwards. I remember doing that when I was a young man. I decided I'm going to be the last man in the meditation retreat to sit in the hall. So, after the talk, you'd be sitting meditation here. I'm going to really sit. And then, after half an hour, you open your eyes, there's 3 people left. Damn. Another 50 minutes, one person left. Come on, get out. You see what that is? You're laughing because you know what I'm talking about. It's all this achievement business of measuring yourself against other people. That's nothing to do with meditation. That causes more mental stress. We want you to really relax to the max mentally as well as physically. And if you understand that, now that's the way to stillness. People who struggle and strive and work very hard, You know, they're the troublemakers of meditation retreats. They never get anywhere. They get very tense and tight. Those who really relax, who know just how to be and be kind to this moment, they're the ones who get very, very, very still. So there's a standard explanation, the essence of how to be still. And when I do this demonstration, I do need... Chandra, you can come up this time. I haven't seen you for a while. But, because when I do this demonstration, it's just like being on TV. You always have to have a beautiful assistant. And I'm safe because, you know, how old are you now, Chandra? So I'm really safe that I don't get in trouble this way. Now, if meditation is stillness, I am this piece of water in here. This represents my mind. And I'm now going to try and hold my mind still. And that's how many people meditate. Now I need Dr. Chandra to tell me with total honesty if this water is still yet. It's not. Okay, so what should I do? My mind isn't still. So let's focus. Let's try harder. Now honestly, I'm really focusing. Actually, it's amazing. When I focus, it shakes more. Have you ever noticed that? When you really concentrate your mind, it moves more. So I really put 100% focus on this. It's moving. That's how many of you meditate. That's why you get so frustrated. I can't meditate. I meditate, do this retreat, that retreat. I try, try, try. My mind never gets still. It's always thinking. It's always agitated. But one day, the penny drops, the light bulb comes on in your mind, or some smart aleck monk tells you what to do. And what to do? You just put it down. Now, Dr. Chandra, it's actually moving more, isn't it, when I first. But I just sit here and relax, enjoy myself, don't do anything. It's still moving. What about now? Almost. Still wait a bit longer. I could never hold it that still. It's pretty still. Thank you. A big round of applause for my assistant. I love having it up and just having fun when you give talks. There's nothing worse than a boring talk just about sort of things you can read in a book. So that demonstration is how you meditate. Leave things alone. Let them go. Be kind to them. Stop trying to get somewhere or do something. That just agitates the mind. Put it down. Leave it alone. Be mindful and just watch. And then your mind becomes perfectly still all by itself. Whoopee. At last I know how to meditate. Now my trouble is, though, is getting you to put your cup down. You just won't do it. It's called attachment. No, I'm going to do it. I'm going to make my mind peaceful. I'm going to do this. I can do this. And you keep trying, trying, trying. And if you do put it down, this is the other thing you do. You put it down. You finally actually let it go. Is it still yet? When are you going to be still? Come on. So, let it go and don't interfere with the process. Just leave it alone. It happens all by itself. Yeah, you've got to be patient sometimes. You know, if you put the brakes on one of these big road trains they have in Western Australia, you know, three or four big trailers, it takes a long time to stop. But it eventually just stops, just wait for a while, and even the road train stops. And it comes perfectly still. It's just so easy. And I'm just looking at it, doing absolutely nothing, and everything is peaceful. Because I realize that I'm the troublemaker. I am the one who disturbs the mind. Every time I want something, I shake it. Every time I want to achieve something, I disturb it. Every time I struggle, I am moving further away from stillness and peace. That's the essence of meditation. As far as insight is concerned, using the same simile, if you have a lake, You just go down and see the lake down below there. If there's any waves on the surface, you can't see a true reflection of the forest during the day or the stars at night. But if that lake is perfectly still, there's not a wave on the surface, then you get a true, undistorted reflection of the moon and the stars in the sky above. Any ripple distorts the image. If you want to have a true insight into the nature of things, if there's any ripple on your mind, the insight will be distorted. You won't see the things as they truly are. But if you're perfectly still, not a ripple going on in your mind, just like the water, glassy smooth, whatever you see, know, is a true reflection. That's where you get insight from. From stillness, we see things. But the other part of stillness, which for me was unexpected because it wasn't emphasized by my first meditation teachers, but which happened, and then when you went back to teachings of the body, it was right there in front of you, but you never noticed it. It's amazing. I was talking with Ajahn Bhamali about this just recently. You can read these teachings of the Buddha for years, and you miss things. And every now and again, someone points it out to you, or you have an experience. You see, it's been there right all the time, but you haven't noticed it. And that is happiness and joy, the piti sukha in meditation. And that is one of the things I emphasize here so much. Not just stillness, but joy and happiness. Because what happens when you do become still, it just not just gives you a perfect reflection of the stars above you, but everything begins to look very beautiful and you become happy. The simile which I give, it's a repeated simile, but again, if you can get a better one, you replace the old ones, but I haven't managed to get a better simile for this for many, many years now. And it's a simile of the road up to this retreat center, which all of you traveled either yesterday or the day before. I don't know when you've been here. But that road from the bottom of the hill to the top where our monastery is 2.16 kilometers long. And I've been staying here for about 7 years until the first time I walked up that hill. It's not that I'm lazy. It's just that no one will let me out at the bottom. They said, no, we'll give you a drive. We'll give you a lift up the top. The only reason I'm overweight, it's not my fault. It's you guys. You just won't let me do any exercise. Sometimes, especially in Sri Lanka, you pick up a boom. No, we'll do that for you. I walk. No, we must give you a lift. No, I just walk. No, you can't walk. We'll take you in the car. That's not my fault, anyway. This one morning, I'd come back from some appointment, I can't remember what, and it was a beautiful spring morning, not like hot and humid like today, just beautiful day. And I told the driver, look, let me out of the bottom. I want to walk up this road, exercise, and just enjoy myself. It's a beautiful day. And I had the time. So for once, he let me out, and I walked up this hill. Now, I've been staying up here for 7 years when this happened. That's 21 years ago now, because I've been up here 28 years now. About 20 years ago this happened. And as I started walking up that hillside, I was astounded. Because I could not recognize my surroundings. Everything looked totally different than everything I remembered about that hillside. I've been living up here for 7 years. I couldn't recognize, the road on which I lived. And that was so weird that I stopped and stood still. And when I stood still and looked, I began to see things I've never ever noticed before on that hillside. Rocks, lichen on the rocks, a little stream down the bottom of the valley, little flowers, just the way the tree bark sort of clinged and twirled around the trees. I started to see so much more detail, and as I looked, it became so incredibly beautiful. Not only was I seeing more, but I was getting more and more happy. And I couldn't understand what was going on. This was weird, because that never happened to me before in 7 years of coming up and down that hill. And I had to turn myself away from that hillside, But as I walked up, I started thinking, what was going on? Did someone slip me some ice or cocaine or something this morning? Why am I so high? And it wasn't drugs or anything, because all it really was, I realized afterwards, that when you look through the window of a car which is speeding, the light does not have enough time to form a proper image on the back of your eye before another image comes up, dislodges the first, and you have to attend to the second one, and then another image, and then another image. Every image is not fully formed. It's only a fraction of the detail there, and the colors aren't rich. Because the reaction on your retina is a chemical reaction. Just like in those old photographs before we had digital cameras. And if you don't allow the image to develop long enough, the colors are pastel and the detail is just not there. So looking through the window of a car, that's what I saw. Washed out silhouettes. Only a fraction of what was there. And I thought that was all that was there. I thought that was my hillside. When I got out of the car and started walking, I was going much slower. So the image on the back of my eye was more fully formed. Not totally formed, but more fully formed, with more depth of color and more detail. That's why when I walked, I could see so much more, things which I'd never noticed before. They were there. When I walked slowly and gave my senses more time. But when I stood perfectly still, that was amazing. Because that was the first time in 7 years I could see that hillside. I was standing still long enough for the image to fully form in the back of my eye. Not only did I see all the detail, but the colors were amazing. You know, they're really rich. And a lot of people have those, they call religious experiences. They go outside and the green of the grass is greener than they've ever seen before. It's rich, it's deep. You know, they see a little flower and it's only a pink thing. And that pink is just so full, so powerfully pink. You know, that's what it's like with colors. And senses, the sounds, the feelings, as if everything has been amplified. And that's what it was like. The color was so deep because they had a chance to fully form. And I realized that's where all this was coming from stillness. You give a chance for the mind to know what's really there. And everything becomes so full and so deep, it becomes incredibly beautiful. That is why that hillside was not just saw so much more. I've never seen that hillside so beautiful as when you stood still. That was the cause of this joy and happiness which comes in meditation. As you slow down and become still, not only do what you see more of. Not only do you see it deeper, but it becomes much more beautiful. And everything becomes delightful. And you have such a wonderful, beautiful time. I know there are some people here who are coming on my retreat for the first time. And I'm sorry, I just cannot resist one of my favorite anecdotes about seeing beauty. Some of you heard it before, but it's such a outrageous story, I'm sure that you'll laugh again. And that was the story of when, this is really over the top, but it's beautiful, that when during one retreat I was getting some very, very deep meditation. My mind was just so still and peaceful and just so much energy that whatever you saw was just so beautiful and joyful. That's just the nature of things. You're so still. You see so much more. And I am a human being, just everybody has to do the same. I had to go to the toilet. And after going to the toilet, I just happened to glance into the bowl to see its contents. Wow! That is so beautiful! I'd never in my whole life seen such a beautiful piece of shit. The brows, they're not just one brow. Next time you go there, have a look. It's not just one brown, it's all different shades of brown. And just the way they are just arranged together like some Picasso. And the way it's just covered with this beautiful film of, you know, a little bit of mucus and water. And it shines like a diamond, you know, in the sunshine. It was sparkly. And the fragrance, my goodness. You always make people laugh. But that's actually a true story. If you'd have been there in the cubicle next to me, you'd probably call for the guys in the white coats to take this crazy micro, because I was really getting off on this beautiful piece of turd. And the reason why, because my mind had opened up, and it was beautiful. You know, it was one of the hardest things I did, but I'm used to letting go. Press the button and see it fall away. I wanted to take it out and take it home with me. To other people. But that's what happens. And look, if you're going to the ladies and there's somebody else in the next toilet cube going, wow, this is amazing, whoa. Now you know what they're up to. They've got good meditation. Well done. But the point was that these are real experiences. You can't make these things up. But there it was. It was so beautiful. And I realized that this is what happens if, you know, you can see the contents of a toilet bowl, and that looks really beautiful. Imagine what happens when you get into meditation and see your breath. Wow. This is breath going in. It's incredibly delightful. Wow. This is great. Now you're in some deep meditation. You're enjoying yourself so much in your meditation. You're sitting here and just having the time of your life. Oh, yeah, give me more. And that's what happens. Why? Because that's what happens when you're still. You see more, and what you see becomes more beautiful, more joy, more happiness. It's called the development of piti sukha, an important part of meditation. The joy and happiness of meditation. The ecstasies. So, a reason I say this at the beginning, if they come up, don't think, oh, something is going wrong. I'm happy. Now that is another profound saying. I don't know how many of you in your life so far, you know, you're happy, something must be wrong. Or you feel guilty, I'm happy. That's not fair. Some of the other people are starving, at war, arguing, having cancers, dying. I don't deserve to be happy. Oh, come on. You deserve to be happy. So allow yourself to be happy. When it comes, enjoy it. And if any of you have any doubts, I've got the translation of the Buddha Suttas in the office. I will show you the Buddha's own words in places like the Aranavibhanga Sutra, where the Buddha said, you don't be afraid of the happiness of meditation. Don't fear it. Instead, indulge in it, follow it, make much of it, develop it. That's what you're supposed to do. And I always have to say this, because sometimes people think I make these things up. So I'm going to say it in Pali, because there's a few Sri Lankans here, just to prove to you I know what I'm talking about. Nabayita bang, ase witta bang, bahulikata bang, bahweta bang. Not to be feared, to be followed, to be pursued, to be made much of, to be developed. The happiness and joys which come in meditation. So said the Buddha. So when happiness comes up, never ever think something's going wrong. No, enjoy it, because it's the happiness and joy shows that you are becoming still. And the happiness and joy will take that stillness even deeper. Because you're enjoying yourself and having such a good time, you don't have to move, you don't want to move. You're so content, you just want to be here, you don't want to go anywhere else, having such a great time. You're getting even more still. And the power is building up. And you get into these incredibly powerful, deep, beautiful meditations. Now I mentioned powerful, deep, beautiful meditations, but be careful, because if I'm not careful, you'll start craving for these things. And it's more wanting, wanting, wanting. Come on, be still. I want to joy. I want to see my beautiful shit. Come on, be still. No. Leave it alone. It happens by itself when you get out of the way. So your job in this retreat is just basically you disappear. You get out of the way and let the meditation happen. Sit down. And I was told the monks a few months ago that sometimes, just to say let go, leave things alone, let things be, sometimes that's a bit too difficult. It is the correct way. You don't know how to let go and how to let things be. So I used another simile. I used to go, you know, because I travel around a lot, I used to get my air tickets from a flight centre, and the place I used to go was in a shopping centre in Mirabooka. And I never liked going in shopping centres. Monks in shopping centres, they just don't mix. Sometimes people think I'm promoting something dressed like this. And actually, I think it was Ajahn Sujata told me that he was, was walking through Sydney. And one of the radio programs, they had this promotion. If you catch the guy wearing the funny suit through Sydney, he'll give you a special prize. And this guy came up to him and said, "I claim my prize." And I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "You're the guy from, you know, the 2AX or something." He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Aren't you the fellow who's dressed in a funny suit and I ask a question and I get the prize?" He said, "No, I'm not. I really am a monk." So that actually happened, you know. Only recently he told me. It made me really laugh. But, so I never liked the shopping centre, but I had to go through there. But one thing I was really surprised about, you know, you must take this for granted, you see it all the time. I see these mothers with their baby in their arms. And they've got the sort of the trolley in their other arms or something. And they navigate through these shopping centres, and there's lots of people bumping this way and bumping that way. They never drop their kid. Never, ever. And the kid knows this so much, the kid is fast asleep. Totally trusts his mother not to drop it. But you, you know, you so watch your breath and you drop it after 5 minutes. And worse, you don't know where you've left it. But imagine that. The mother, there's a mother sort of got into the shopping centre with the kid and gone back home afterwards. "Hey, I thought I had the baby with me. Where did I leave the baby?" "I had it somewhere." Because why is it the mother never drops the baby? Why is it the mother never leaves it and forgets where they've left it? Because the mother cares for the baby. That's all. She's not tense. She's just got this beautiful, constant care. Which means the baby is always safe, never gets dropped, never gets left anywhere. See, that care is the important ingredient of mindfulness. That's what maintains it. If you care for the stages of meditation, so you care for this present moment, you don't need to control it, don't need to force it, don't need to hold the baby so hard you strangle the poor thing. No, you just hold it gently and you care for it, and then you'll never drop it. If you care for this moment, it will always be there. If you care for the silence of the mind, so important silence. As I've been telling people recently, especially in places like Singapore, you know, when they're very, very interested in their finances, silence is golden. You've heard that saying before, silence is golden. People have told me, because of the European debt crisis, the price of gold has gone up. So gold has almost doubled in price over the last 12 months. So silence was really golden and important last year. It's even more important this year. It's even more valuable. So silence, if you care for it, you'll never drop it. Other things come into your mind and they won't disturb you because you care for the silence. You care for this breath. And really with a lot of metta importance, you're caring for the breath. You care for the meditation, you care for the stillness. And if you develop that caring mind, it's so easy to let go. You're sitting there caring for this present moment, caring for the silence, caring for the breath. You don't drop it. And it stays there long enough to get into these beautiful states of meditation. You're so happy. And then there's no effort required at all, nothing to do at all. You're having such a good time, you can't take your mind away, attention away from the breath and all the other things which happen afterwards. It's the joy which sticks you onto your meditation object. It pulls you in. So you'd have to make no effort whatsoever. You sit there and enjoy yourself. How many of you like watching movies? How long is a movie? Is it a couple of hours sometimes? What's the longest movie these days? What? Sorry?
2 hours.
2 hours, okay. When you watch a movie, are you restless? Do you fall asleep? Do you have to get up and go to the toilet? No, if it's a really good movie. You might be crossing your legs, but you can't get up. It's just too interesting, too exciting, too important. You may be watching the cricket or the soccer or the football or whatever else you watch. It's just too important. If you could only do that with your meditation. You're watching the breath. Wow, this is really important. I wonder what's going to happen next. If you could have that same interest and joy, you could sit for 2 hours. How many of you can sit meditation for 2 hours without moving? You can watch the movie for 2 hours. Why can't you do that with meditation? Because the movie is more enjoyable. The movie grabs your attention. It's more fun. Because you haven't got to that stage where the meditation is more fun than the movie. When you get to that stage, the pity soup, you're having such a wonderful time. You're watching this breath. Wow, this is really nice. Yeah, give me more. And you have a great time. And that's when people meditate more. And it's because of reasons like that, that on this retreat, we don't have many schedules. Here comes another terrible Ajahn Brahm joke. One of my worst puns, but I love inflicting this on you. This, as you all know, is a Nobel Silence Retreat. You've heard Nobel Silence before? You know what it means? What it means is there are no bells. That's why we call it no bell silence. Terrible, isn't it? There's no bells to wake you up in the morning. No damn bells to tell you to get up from your meditation cushion. No bells to tell you now you can go to bed. Come on, you're grown ups. This is not a school anymore. This is not the army. So there's no bell silence, which means for the rest of this retreat, you get up when you want to get up. When you feel, now you want to meditate. You're being kind and caring to your body. Aware enough to know if it needs some more sleep or if it needs to get up. You're aware enough to know, yes, I want to meditate a little bit longer. No, this is enough. Whether it's half an hour or 5 hours, you keep it totally natural, unchoreographed. Just allow it to evolve according to its nature. Because I remember going to these retreats. And sometimes, now you may know this, you have, say, a 45-minute meditation. And my legs were killing me. I was in such pain. I was just waiting. Please, please, ring that damn bell. Ring it quick, 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 quick. Look at your watch. And I'm sure it's gone past the time. And I was just really hated that teacher for not ringing the bell soon enough. And other times, you had this beautiful meditation. Really, really peaceful. Almost enlightening. Gong. If you just give me another 5 minutes, I'd probably have psychic powers by now. But a lot of times, have you not experienced that in your life? You know, you're really getting into it and you have to leave. You really should be leaving, but you have to keep getting into it. And it's just totally unnatural. And that causes so much suffering in meditation. So here we keep it natural. Yeah, we've got, you know, the only things which, you know, we have got schedules for, and you don't really mind that, is the food. And you never need to ring a bell to know what time breakfast is and lunch is. There's something, you know what time it is. So that you don't need bells for. So because we have no bells on this retreat, you've got more chance, here comes the second bad pun, you've got more chance of winning the Nobel Peace Prize. Nobel silence means the Nobel Peace Prize. So what that means is that you could actually get some peace at last instead of being a slave to the clock. And that also ties in with the most important stage of the meditation, the first stage of present moment awareness. Please, throughout this whole retreat, present moment, it's the only time you ever have. You're not trying to get anywhere, being here. Remember, be here during this retreat, wherever that happens to be. Whenever that happens to be, be here. Be here. Be here. And when you stop going places, either going to jhanas or going to enlightenment, the fast track to the most powerful meditator in the whole of Australia or the world or wherever you want to be, the universe, if you're trying to go somewhere in life, you'll never have any understanding of meditation. Just be here. Let go of craving and desires. And for the first time, be in life as it happens, rather than always being one or two or 100 steps ahead of yourself. Don't plan anything. As I often say in Nolamara, now is the only time you ever have. Now is the place your future is being made. Now is the only time, the only place you can do anything about the future. Right now. And every time we think of tomorrow, the next day, or some other place in the future, when we're not attending to the place where we can do something about the future right now, we are actually destroying our future. We're harming it. If you could only spend more time in this present moment looking after the only place you can do anything about the future, looking after the place your future is being made, you have far more success in life. And that's very, very important in meditation. Right now is the only place you get enlightened. Right now is the only place you find peace. Right now is where you find truth. Not in the next moment. So every time you look away from the present moment, you're looking away from the Buddha. You're looking away from the truth. Stay in this moment as much as you can. And you'll find the meditation is so easy, so powerful, and so joyful. That's one of the reasons why I threw up the schedule list. Present moment is what's important. Not sort of 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock. So we leave the schedules, destroy them as much as we possibly can. Yeah, we agreed to have an 8 o'clock talk. This is the lunches and breakfasts and teas or whatever, but look, if you feel like you want a cup of tea some other time, get yourself a cup of tea. If you want to meditate in the middle of the night, 1 o'clock in the morning, meditate and sleep during the daytime. I don't care. You just work with your body, with what you need to do at every moment of this retreat. Get rid of all this stress, all this chasing the clock, all of these plans of what you're going to do and how you're going to do it and when you're going to do it. Do that and you'll relax. When your body relaxes, your mind will be free. It will become still. When it's still, it becomes joyful. When it's joyful, it becomes powerful. It sees all these incredible dhammas. And you go to stages in meditation you've never believed existed. Great stages, beautiful stages. And you're happy little meditators. And I will know whether you've got the message. Not by the questions you ask in the evening, because from 8 to 9 is a question time. So during the daytime, if you've got any doubts, any questions, you can write them on a piece of paper, put them on the table outside. In the evening, I will answer them. They don't have to be serious questions. I really like cheeky ones. So if you can think of a cheeky one or a funny one, I'm very happy to answer them. They're really good fun. But serious ones as well. Write them on a piece of paper and then I will answer them. And I will know if you're getting some nice meditation by your smile. Because you know there's nothing more miserable than having a retreat of these zombies. Always going around as if, you know, they're just about to die, as if they're just going to somebody's funeral. Yeah, we're not supposed to talk to each other, you know, keep it quiet. But it's all right to smile. You can smile at each other. Because you know, sometimes, you know what it's like on a retreat, sometimes, some days you're having a really hard time. And if somebody just smiles at you, it just lifts you up a bit. But you know, if everyone is so miserable and horizontal mouthed and just, you know, as if it's some sort of Puritan camp. No. This is like happy time. It's your meditation. That's why years and years ago I called this place Club Med. I did that joke years ago and somebody stole it from me. They put it in the West Australian newspaper. But it's Club Med Serpentine. And calling it Club Med, you know, Club Mediterranean, Club Meditation, it just gives you just the idea that this is a fun place. Not sort of a fun place by doing things, a fun place by being still. Get that attitude, fun, joy, peace, stillness, happiness. And then you get the underlying idea of how to meditate. And of course, every morning I'll give you some more instructions, hints, you know, just basically telling what you already know, a few jokes, a few funny stories, just to keep you going. So I'm there for you, but now the first day, take it easy. Especially those of you who come from afar, if you feel tired, take a nap. We call that in Buddhism the Ananda method of enlightenment. If you don't know that story, I'll tell the whole story towards the end of the retreat. But Ananda, he was the attendant of the Buddha, one of the chief disciples of the Buddha. And when the Buddha passed away, Ananda was still not enlightened. And he thought, if I can't be enlightened after being with a Buddha for 25 years, almost every day, listen to all of his teachings, being one of the greatest masters, and I've blown it. 25 years, I'm still not enlightened. What chance do I have now? But there was a big meeting of all the great monks. 500 monks were meeting together. 499 of them were perfectly enlightened with psychic powers, all except this poor Ananda guy. Imagine the peer pressure. Imagine. So he stayed up all night meditating and meditating and meditating. Now that's the reason why he didn't get enlightened. Trying to get enlightened, trying to achieve something. But when he got to dawn, he was absolutely nowhere, hopeless. You have that feeling sometimes. You're meditating, meditating, getting nowhere, absolutely hopeless. And so what did he do? He decided to go and take a nap. So as he lay down, according to the legend, just before his head hit the pillow, he became fully enlightened, with psychic powers as well. Brilliant. So we call that the Ananda method of enlightenment. So if you want to try that out today, the first time. It doesn't work the first time. It doesn't work this morning. Try it this afternoon. Try it. Be kind to yourself. If you feel you don't need a rest, meditate. If you feel you need to walk, walk. Need just a cup of tea, have a cup of tea. So just keep it natural, okay? Be mindful of your body. Care for it. And then you'll have a great time. So don't even try very much the first day. First day is just settling in. Just be kind to your body. Learn how to relax the body, relax the mind. If you feel like meditating, great. But you won't get anything out of meditation. But just sit anyway. And then you might achieve something. Okay, so that's enough for this morning's first little talk. There'll be much more to come, so enjoy yourselves. And I'll see you around the place. Lunch is at 11 o'clock. We will have interviews, but not the first day. Give you a chance to settle in, me to settle in. So any questions, write them on the piece of paper outside and they'll be answered this evening. So is there any questions from the floor before we finish off? Precepts. Okay. I hereby give you the precepts. So, you've got the precepts now. You've got the 8 precepts. You don't need a monk to give you the precepts. Because I've seen that before for so many years. The monks will give the precepts. You're Sri Lankan, well, you've been in England now for a long time. But one of the monks said that in Sri Lanka, that sometimes they take the 13 precepts. Because you've got the 5 precepts, which is for everybody, you know, not killing, not stealing, not committing adultery, not lying, not taking alcohol, from non-medicinal drugs. That's the 5 precepts which most Buddhists are supposed to keep. When they go to temples or on retreats, they're supposed to keep the 8 precepts. No, not killing, not stealing, no sexuality at all, not lying, not taking alcohol or drugs, not eating food in the afternoon. You've got all these other things you're allowed over here, so it's not that hard. Not eating in the afternoon. Not using makeup. So that's why, you know, the monks never use makeup. Jewelry, adornments. Not sort of singing or dancing, listening to the TV or listening to music. Chanting's okay because, you know, no one in their right mind would call that music. Not the way I chant anyway. And lastly, not using luxurious furnishings. Your beds are okay, the chairs are okay, but we're talking about, you know, four-poster beds, water beds, king beds, that sort of stuff. So those are the eight precepts. And even in, you know, on the holy days in Sri Lanka, they do those eight precepts. Now, you've seen that. And the five precepts for other days. But sometimes people in Sri Lanka keep the 13 precepts now. They keep the eight precepts in the morning and the five precepts in the afternoon. You know what I mean, don't you? Can you see that? In other words, they're not really being serious about these precepts. And the other precept story, this is when I've been over in Australia a while. I went to Thailand. And all these Thai people, they're taking the five precepts. You know, they put your hands up like this. And I saw this guy. And that's what they usually do, put their hands up like this. I saw him do this. I've never seen that before. And so I asked him afterwards, what does that mean? You know, you're putting your hands up like this. He said, oh, I'm only keeping four precepts today. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4. They still chant all of them. And that made me start to look. And yeah, sure enough, I saw somebody with two precepts. They didn't tell me which precepts they were breaking. And after a while, yeah, I did see one person. What's the point of taking the precepts if you don't really want to keep them? So at the end, it's just, you know what the precepts are. You just say, well, I'm going to keep these precepts. That's what you need to do. Rather than just doing all the ceremonies, which sometimes the ceremonies take away from the meaning. So yeah, you know what the precepts are, just keep them. And if there's anybody here who has any sort of physical problems, you have diabetes and you some sort of sickness, you need antibiotics, so you need something to make the stomach not sort of get sore in the afternoon, just talk with Bianca. You can have something. So, you know, this is not trying to make life hard for you. The reason we go out without the evening meal is just for simplicity. So it keeps an empty stomach. You get much better meditation on an empty stomach because all the blood can go to your head instead of down to the brain. Sorry, go to the head instead of down the tummy. I know that some monk's brain is down here, but so it's much better for you. So it's nice and easy. No problem at all. It's just for simplicity. But if there's any problem, compassion is the most important thing, so I'm sure we'll look after you. So any other questions there? Okay, the entertainment is now over. So now you want to take a rest, do some walking, a bit of meditation. It's really up to you. And if today's not so bad, it's a bit sort of humid, but if people want the air conditioning on, because that's what we've got the air conditioning for, if it gets very hot, especially in the afternoon, I'd rather have people comfortable. Because I remember, just even yesterday, I went into Nolamara and I was really tired and I wanted to meditate and I turned on the aircon in the room I have there. And it's a really nice meditation because now my body was built in England. Now underneath this I've got made in England mark on it. And if it's really hot you get sort of dull. You get a bit cool and you get much better meditation. If that's going to work for you, fine. Please use the aircon if it's going to help you. But you've got to be careful because some people are chilly willies. You know, some people are just, you know, hot cake, whatever. No, that's not the right word, is it? But anyway, some people like it hot, some people like it cold. So try and sort of, you know, find a middle way somewhere. Daniel, yeah?
Are you about to put it on now?
Oh, yeah, just see. Who thinks the aircon should be on right now? Any hands up? Oh, you have quite a few people. Okay. Who thinks it shouldn't be on now? Well, there you go. You've won. So we can actually set it to a certain temperature. I don't know what temperature you'd like. But
during the talk, maybe I just turn it off so that...
Okay, yeah, and afterwards. So, but what that means is you have a nice cool room to come to if it gets very hot and muggy during the day. And that means you can be comfortable. The rooms over here, we've got three rooms. They've all got air cons in for walking meditation. Maybe, you know, at least one of them we can keep on, one we can keep off. So that, you know, people who like it a bit sort of warm can go in the warm one, one can go in the cold room. And you can always sit in the corner there when people are meditating. If it's too cold in here or too hot in here, that can also help. But the rooms are also very nice to meditate in. Especially those, you know, who if it gets a bit hot and you like it cold, go in the bathroom, because all those towels there keep it nice and cool. Put your mat in there and just meditate there. So, you know, be adaptive. But we have to keep the door closed when the aircon's on, just so we don't waste too much. So you've got to be very careful when you open and close the doors. Do it very slowly, especially when you're going out. Don't just push the door open, because there might be someone on the other side. It might be me. That bad karma. Okay, very good. Any other questions before we finish off? Okay, so have a really great day. See you around, see you for lunch, and I'll see you for this afternoon and for this evening as well. Oh, remember what I taught you this morning? Sadhu! Sadhu!